Good morning, everybody. My name is Howard Chapman, and I will be chairing the Planning Committee meeting on behalf of Chairperson Guang Ming Whitley. First item is call to order, which I've done. Second item is approval of the minutes from the May 2nd, 2022 meeting.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, call for the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, next item is public comments. You have 2.5 minutes to come up and tell us what your public comments are. You need to give your name and address, please, if you'll come to the podium.
My name is Laurie Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue. I'm here for the short-term rentals again. It's really disheartening to see only 3 people on the committee today. Anyway, my comment today is that when I opened this Pandora's box, it was because there were 437 properties have permits when the council had voted for 400. And after an inquiry, it has come back and forth for month after month after month. The only thing that opened the Pandora's box was the 437 houses that were now permitted. And at that point, there were 83 houses on the wait list. I think now there's 95. Anyway, my point today is, please don't do anything until and unless you put together either a advisory committee or a commission or something to make this thing right, to have this ordinance go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth between our competent staff, our caring commission, our caring committee, and then council. Back, bounce, 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 bounce. This affects our lives. Could you all please stop and put together a task force and let the task force come up with some things and let this thing get cleaned up that makes staff happy, that makes the town happy, that makes the neighbors happy, and that makes the short-term rental owners happy. It would be greatly appreciated if you would slow down now and stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Mary Ricosi. I live at 136 Heritage Circle, and I'm also here to talk about short-term rentals. I usually like to wait and go last so I can hear what everybody else says and see if there's anything that I can add, but this time I'd like to do something a little different. I started my first short-term rental 6 years ago. I now have 2. I'm what's called a superhost. I have a 5-star rating. This is my business. Contrary to many of the comments that I've heard here about how much we make per night, I'm doing well, but I'm not getting rich off this enterprise. Along with the nightly rates that we collect, we have electric bills to pay, water bills to pay, cleaners, nice cable bills, lawn care, pest control, insurance, 6% taxes, which we all know is substantially more than the 4%, permits and business license fees, and I'm sure I've even missed some. The long and the short of it is, this is my business. And like the rest of us that come here month after month to speak, we're professionals at what we do. No one has asked us what we think would work. There's no task force with short-term rental owners' input. But as someone who lives this business day in and day out, the language in the draft, it's not tightened. It raises many more concerns for myself and the other STR professionals that we'll be back here again in a year or two going down the same trail that we've been down before. I want this program to work. It's good for the town and it's good for me as a business owner that strives for 5 stars. Please change as little as need be in this program. It's running smoothly. It's working. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to be heard?
Good morning. My name is Robbie Wicksell, and I live at 812 Fiddler's Point Lane. I'm a church member, and I'm speaking to the Highway 17 property development. I'm a church member at the Church at Life Park, and I'm an elder. 15 years ago, Life Park chose to incorporate into the town to receive services and to serve the people of our community. We donated 1,700 feet of a 50-foot right-of-way for All American Boulevard. We constructed a 2-acre community park. We have 2,000 attendees on a Sunday morning. We have funerals, weddings, counseling, and significant conversations on porches and parking lots. It's a quiet place. It's a quiet place of refuge in a busy town. We met with the developer representatives for each of their 3 different plans. This is the first time we've expressed any concern. We're very concerned with the nuisance noise of dogs. We met with the kennel developer a couple weeks ago to learn that they will house up to 185 dogs, with 4 groups of 20 dogs being outside at one time. The developer has 47 properties and says that these operations are not disruptive to their neighbors. We received the list of their properties, and they're either in remote or busy areas, and none are currently constructed and operating next to a large, quiet church campus. With the best of intentions, there will be nuisance noises. There's no such thing as effective exterior sound attenuation. Town of Mount Pleasant laws and ordinance regarding pets says allowing or permitting an animal to bark, whine, howl in excessive, continuous, untimely, and or unreasonable fashion so as to result in a serious annoyance or interference with reasonable use and enjoyment of neighboring properties. We're concerned we're being set up to be continuously annoyed and in conflict with the dog development. We'll then be in conflict with the town, continuously asking for relief. We ask for your help to either not approve this location or move the location as far as possible from the church and restrict their outdoor activities such they do not interfere with the daily, not just Sunday, activities of the church at Life Park. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to be heard? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 4 on the agenda, which is a review of Planning Commission recommendations from the June 22nd, 2022 meeting. Ms. Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Good morning, committee members. So this first request is a proposal to amend the Central Mount Pleasant plan development. Proposed is to incorporate 3 abutting parcels into the plan development, which would increase the overall development by about 2.2 acres. Here is an aerial of the 3 properties. You can see they abut, the corner one abuts Hungry Neck Boulevard, Midtown Avenue. We have Venning and then Rifle Range, which is off the screen, but you can see in future aerials here down below the development. They are currently zoned AB, Area-Wide Business District. They are contiguous to the plan development. So all of the plan development that you can see for Central is the gray area. All of the hatched that you see, that's all county property. This is all zoned R4 in the county, which is residential. Here's the comp plan, which calls for community scale commercial for the entire area, including these 3 parcels. And here's a layout of the Central Mount Pleasant property in the context of those 3 parcels. So again, you can see Hungry Neck Boulevard, Midtown, Rifle Range. Central Mount Pleasant is broken up into 3 sections. You have your mixed-use center tract, which these 3 parcels will be incorporated into. You have the neighborhood tract, the hamlet tract, and then you have the school tract across Rifle Range Road. This is the conceptual plan of the property. Again, you can see those 3 parcels to be proposed to be incorporated. One thing to note, this is in the Hungry Neck Venning Road Boulevard Overlay District. When you have a property that is zoned PD, in the hierarchy of zoning, the PD overrides that. But we do want to take into consideration the Hungry Neck Venning overlay, the fact that this is the 4-mile community. And I'll talk about that a little bit more when we talk about buffers. So the 4 main points, or the 3 main points I want to talk about are the proposed amendment, what that means, that overlay and those buffer requirements, and then a future update to the impact assessment. So again, this is the 4th amendment to the Central Mount Pleasant to incorporate those AB parcels in. They would be in the mixed-use tract. Currently, they are allotted the AB uses. Those are generally comparable to the mixed-use tract, except for three uses, really, that I could find. That was the townhouse dwellings, a hotel, a motel, and then a gas station. Where it would be permitted here, it would be a special exception in the area-wide business district. This is an acreage chart. So we know it's not going to be residential. They're maxed out on all of their vested residential uses, so I just wanted to show that. You can see that even though townhouse dwellings are permitted, that would not be a use here. So as it's currently adopted, the mixed-use tract within the plan development is comprised of almost 44 acres, and it's approved for 275,000 retail, 75,000 office, and then those existing mixed-use residential, which are the townhouses. What they're specifically asking for is to bring in those three parcels and then change those uses up a little bit. So the existing mixed-use residential, the townhouses, would remain the same. Your retail would drop down to 75,000 square foot. Your office and medical use, that would go up to 200,000 square feet. And then they would have an additional 125 hotel rooms. And right now we have, through the Hyatt, there's 128 rooms already existing, so this would add on for a total of 253 hotel rooms. So these are some of the existing developments in the mixed-use tract, MUSC, the Haven, the Hyatt, and then, of course, the townhouses. So the next thing I want to talk about were the buffers. The Central Mount Pleasant PD dictates what the buffers are, and it says that you have to have a perimeter buffer type E, 25 foot for the entire area, but it doesn't specify what you have to have within that buffer. So basically, this is what it would look like if you had it. I think it does specify 6-inch plus caliber trees, but this is kind of in concept what it would look like. And in reality, this is what it looks like. The Hungry Neck Boulevard Overlay District specifies that you have a type E buffer, which is what our town ordinance zoning code buffer yards requires as well. So when staff presented this to the Planning Commission, we did recommend that we make a condition, that there be a condition approved that not only is it a 25 foot, but that it's a type E, specifically 6-inch canopy trees, 9 understory trees, 36 shrubs, and 18 evergreens. So we wanted to add that in there to make sure that they met the intent of the Hungry Neck Venting Overlay District. And the commission did approve that with that condition. And then third, I wanted to talk about the impact assessment. This is not an impact assessment. That is going to be forthcoming. This entire development is predicated on a 2016 impact assessment. And what that really did was set the maximum trips. So you had all these uses that you can see in this table. And while that is separate and distinct from this PD amendment, because of what's coming, so we already have these existing uses in the mixed-use tract and throughout the whole PD. But I know everybody's familiar with the Gather Mount Pleasant, which is going to be coming. So when you take that in conjunction with this proposed three parcels for the additional hotel rooms, that in and of itself is going to meet the requirement for an update to that trip table. So when you go back here, we're going to be seeing, and that'll be coming from the commission to you and then to council, an update to that trip generation table that will include the Gather as well as these three new parcels and those uses. So again, Planning Commission did recommend approval of this PD amendment. They did recommend that that 25-foot buffer be specified for a type E. I did want to mention that the Transportation Department recommends that there's no direct access on Midtown Avenue. And for consideration, there would be a ride-in, ride-out only on Hungry Neck Boulevard in accordance with those standards. And I know that our Transportation Department engineer is here, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. First of all, are there any questions of Ms. Reed by the committee? Ms. Corley.
Thank you. That was a very... I had 10 questions in my head, and you answered just about all of them in that short presentation. But what's the height again out there?
The height is, I believe, 45 feet.
Okay.
And there's no proposal to change the height throughout the PD.
And Right now it's AB, and the only, the only differences would be those three things you stated, and the fact that they're maxed out with residential makes me feel a lot better as well. And I love the buffer idea. I liked all of Commission's recommendations and the transportation ideas. I think that really put my mind at ease as well. That's it. Thank you.
Any other questions? I have several, but it might be better to bring up the representatives from the Transportation Department. And I've asked these questions earlier, but I want them on the record. First of all, on Midtown development as a whole, where are we with the traffic signal at Rifle Range and Founders Way?
I'm going to let James answer that because we just received the warrant study.
Yes, sir. As Brad mentioned, we just received prior to the holiday weekend the draft signal warrant analysis for that intersection. And as it stands now, it does not meet warrants for the installation of a signal. And then in addition to that report, there was a projected 30% increase to the baseline trips that were collected as is now, and it still did not meet the warrants for those projected values.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that's my first question. Second, if you could go back to the aerial. There you go. At the intersection where 40A intersects with, I guess it's a driveway coming on the north side of the townhouses, that's a dead end without any kind of a turnaround. Is it possible to add that as part of our recommendations?
Right here.
Mr. Chapman, are you speaking of an internal road that exists within Central Mount Pleasant?
Well, it's a road that has been built in front of the townhouses, which is 40A.
40A, yes.
And if you come, if you go north on 40A, you run into a dead end with no ability to turn around, number one. And number two, it's a one-way road sending you into the dirt.
I was not involved with that design, but...
maybe this aerial is outdated.
I think that's it. I wasn't looking in the right place, but I believe their access comes from around the building to into that area, so it did not require a cul-de-sac.
No, you can turn... 40A is two-way. 40A is two-way in front of the townhouses.
Well, to your question, that's the existing condition, and if there was any consideration in the development of either the gathering, I don't know the extent of that, if it goes down to that area, or the rest of this parcel, then we could certainly look at cul-de-sacking, making that a cul-de-sac design where people could turn around, unless, of course, it turned into the adjacent development.
Well, my point is, we're getting ready to update this PD. This is part of the PD. We need to make something happen to give the ability for a turnaround at the end of that road. And something is missing.
Well, and Mr. Chapman, I think that we could address this when all of these parcels come in for the impact assessment update.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that'll be a consideration.
Okay, well, I'm making that a request.
Okay.
If I can get a second from a committee member, I would appreciate it.
Is that not something that you can just put a sign? I need to go out.
No, because it's one way. Right now, there's a one-way sign at the end of that road. And it's one way, the wrong way.
And you can't just say, do not enter, there's no...
You're into the dirt if you do that. There's no way to turn around, except backing up.
I'll give it a second, but I need to go look at it.
I believe the design was essentially the end of a parking lot, so I don't know that they would typically have that cul-de-sac type design for that. But once again, I hear your concern, and we can certainly review that when the adjacent parcels come on. Now, that will require permission from the existing owner of that property. That's private property.
Okay. Well, I'd like you to look at that as part of the approval.
Yes, sir.
Lack thereof for this update of the PD. My third is access from these three additional parcels along Midtown at that intersection, because right now access would be, I think, too close to the intersection. But I'm not wild about any access on Hungry Neck either. So
the condition staff recommended was there's no access. None of this has changed since the original PD was adopted, from the intersection of the signal all the way back to the existing access at NUSC and the one that is currently blocked off. It's not completed yet. There's no access to Midtown in that area whatsoever.
So how, explain to me how access to these three additional parcels is going to be provided.
Well, we haven't seen a development plan yet, but at that point in time, will have to become internal to the Central Mount Pleasant PD. And that's always been the condition. In fact, I think it was a note on the sketch plan at one point that all that access has to come from that access point of Midtown internally to those parcels. And we could consider, just like we did at the hotel across the way, and in accordance with, I believe, we have a recommended access management plan as part of the overlay district, that there'd be right in, right out consideration of that location. So, as long as it meets the access management standards, we would consider that. And the median is already there. So they could have right in, right out on Hungry Neck Boulevard and then internal access only through Central Mount Pleasant PD.
Well, that's another point I would like to suggest, that no access be provided onto either Hungry Neck or onto Midtown for these three parcels.
Get in.
They would get in through the parcel that's already part of Midtown as part of whatever happens with the gathering. Yeah. Correct.
And Mr. Chapman, Central Mount Pleasant has a concept of kind of the Main Street design, and so they'll likely have from the gather to these parcels an internal, like
that's,
Mr. Morrison
said. That's what I'm after.
Right.
That's okay. What I'm after. All right. Those are my three questions. Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your help on Friday.
Any
other discussion from members of the committee?
I was going to ask a question about the trips. You're saying, when we go back to that chart, mm-hmm. were you saying that still has to be determined?
Yeah, so any time that they make changes that affects these trips, they would come back, and I think this table you're looking at here, I think is probably the second or third iteration of this that's been approved by town council through an update. But really their impact assessment is predicated on, and they gave themselves some flexibility with their uses, but they said we won't go over this maximum total daily trips. And if we do, we got to come back and update this trip generation table through the impact assessment. And so staff brought these concerns up when the project was going through our design review team, our internal staff review. And we felt like that they could move forward with this PD amendment. The PD amendment is typically the same as a rezoning. We bring these three parcels into the PD, but we let them know that between the Gather project and these three parcels proposing what could go there, potentially 128 hotel rooms, that this would more than likely necessitate an update to the impact assessment. So, and that again would have to go to Planning Commission, it would come to this body and then to Town Council. So So you'll be seeing that probably in the next couple of months.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I had one more question. The difference between a type D as in Delta and E as in Echo buffer. Didn't you say that the Planning Commission recommended type E as in Echo buffer as opposed to D as in Delta?
Well, the PD doesn't specify a type. It just says a 25-foot width with 6-foot canopy trees. Both the overlay, Hungry Neck Venting Overlay, and our town buffer yard ordinance says a type E. So it specifies these plantings. And so staff recommended that it be specified, but not just a 25-foot, but a type E. And the Planning Commission recommended approval. So right now it just says a 25-foot. Staff recommended and Planning Commission recommended a type E.
Did I miss something? Did I not see a type E as an echo?
Yeah, type E. Not there was no type D.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm looking at the D after chapter.
The section of the chapter, yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Any other questions before I call for a motion from members of the committee?
Mr. Chapman?
Yes, ma'am.
Just for clarification, previously on the recommendation on the turnaround, that was just a recommendation, not a formal motion, correct?
Well, I think I'm hearing that will be looked at as part of the overall plan, and I'm just saying, I was just trying to decide how to convey that, because right now at the end of 40A there's no means of turning around, so and you have to turn the wrong way onto a one-way street, and the last option is simply to back up behind vehicles that are already parked and would be backing out of parking spaces. So it's not the best traffic design I've ever seen.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll move that we approve the request to amend the Central Mount Pleasant PD Plan Development District Ordinance.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. I'm going to recommend an amendment to the motion, and that is to take into account all of the buffer yard requirements that both the town staff as well as the Planning Commission has recommended, and that's in the form of an amendment to the original motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion made and seconded for an amendment to the original motion to include all of the recommendations from the Planning Commission and the town staff as it relates to buffers. Any question on the amendment?
Yep.
Okay, the vote will be on the amendment and then on the full motion. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment carries. The next is a vote on the original motion as amended. All those in favor of the original motion as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Okay. The amended motion passes to approve. And I guess this is where I was looking at type E, and that's mm-hmm. perfect. That's perfect. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay. On to the next item.
All right, this is an impact assessment and conceptual plan request for approval. I'll talk a little bit about where these parcels are. I think y'all have seen them through the rezoning process, and then I'll talk a little bit about what an impact assessment is. And so this is about 14 and a half acres off of Highway 17 across from the Lowe's at Oakland. It's comprised of 8 parcels. It is adjacent to Life Park Church across from the Lowe's. It's kind of between Highway 17 and All American Boulevard. It's currently, it's residential in the county to the south, which is R4. And then Lowe's across the street is in a plan development. And here you can see all of the orange. It is currently zoned AB. The church is PI, public institutional. And then across, of course, you have the plan development. Just one thing I want to point out, and I'll bring that up in a minute. You can see in the middle of the area-wide business, not the ones running Highway 17, but the one parcel there that's hatched that is kind of in the middle of the eight parcels. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. So the comprehensive plan does recommend community-scale commercial for this entire area. So just a little bit of history. These parcels in 2019 were annexed in. You might recall it was a pretty lengthy process. The owner took a great deal of time, I think 140, 150 heirs, got all the signatures. It was annexed in, and it was zoned area-wide business district to be developed as the Mount Pleasant Racquet Club. Since then, there have been, and we knew when they came in, it was not just going to be a racquet club. There were going to be other supporting uses. And they did try to come in at one point, try to rezone a portion of it to AB2. That was subsequently denied, so it all stays AB. It's currently zoned area-wide business. And this current request involves a variety of office, commercial, and recreational uses, such as medical office, luxury pet boarding, the 8 tennis courts, 14 pickleball courts, and an amenity center. All of these uses are all permitted in the area-wide business district. This totals nearly 70,000 square feet of commercial and recreational uses over the 14-acre site, which prompted an impact assessment. So if you have a commercial development that exceeds 40,000 square feet, you are required to do an impact assessment. So just to kind of give you a brief explanation of why we require this is to look at basically a major development. Instead of coming in as the having the racquet facility come in or having the pet facility come in or the medical use, we don't want the piecemeal of each of these coming in, looking at them as individual projects. We require that threshold for an impact assessment so that we can look at it more comprehensively, particularly in terms of stormwater, drainage, and transportation. So, again, it well exceeded that threshold, and so it met all of the zoning requirements. There were no rezonings required for any of the proposed uses. So what we looked at is the impacts it's going to have on the surrounding areas. So an impact assessment is always accompanied with a conceptual plan, which is different from a zoning map, but it's similar in that it shows your uses and different things like that. You have to give a general description of the proposed major development project. And then you have to talk about specific impacts. Again, that's drainage, transportation, and then how services are going to be provided. They have to do findings. Either they're unacceptable, negative, or versus acceptable. And then they have to talk about mitigation if they meet certain requirements. So the town's development review team, we looked at this multiple times, and they were overall satisfied with the impact assessment submittal. There were some minor things that needed to be addressed, and then we also wanted to get input and recommendations from Planning Commission and Council. So the Planning Commission did recommend approval of this with a couple of conditions, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But the first main three things I want to talk about are the residential access and phasing, the width of the natural roadside buffer, and then the conditional use of the pet daycare. So the proposed development, as mentioned earlier, consists of these types of uses, again, all permitted in the area-wide business district. So retail office, restaurant, medical office, pet boarding, grooming facility, and then the clubhouse associated with the racquetball facility. Here's a layout of what it's going to look like. The retail village and the pet boarding facility would be considered phase one. The racquet club facility and those uses with the medical office would be coming in phase two. So this property that remains in the county, the one thing we did want to point out and to make sure that it's not going to be landlocked remaining in the county, we're not really aware of the status of the coordination between the developer and that the owner of that property, but the phasing of this development is going to require that they make sure that there's access there. And so our recommendation was that a plan would be required to show accessibility to that lot prior to the issuance of any building permit. The impact assessment included a transportation impact assessment. They included this summary of development impact fees. I know we talked a little bit about All American Boulevard, which Mr. Morrison can talk about again in a minute, but I did want to point out that our transportation staff did concur with this table of development impact fees, and the developer has been made aware that they do have the option of constructing a portion of All American Boulevard in lieu of paying some or a portion or all of these fees. They're not obligated to do so, though, because it's a programmed capital improvement project, but that has been a discussion point with them. This is All American Boulevard, just to show the layout of that. And this was in the applicant's presentation to the Planning Commission. So they are proposing one primary entrance along Highway 17. SCDOT did not have any objections to that proposed access. However, they will be required to install a right turn lane for the southbound US 17 approach. And then there's also the potential for that intersection to be signalized, but that would be pending a traffic signal warrant analysis, so that's to be determined yet. And they're proposing three access points onto All American Boulevard, as you can see in the top exhibit. I want to touch real quick on stormwater before I get to the natural roadside buffer. This whole side includes an overall master drainage plan. They will be required for their post-development discharge rates would have to be equal to or less than their pre-development. So they'll have to meet all of town standards, and that would occur later through the development process. The second thing I want to talk about is the natural roadside buffer. So our current zoning ordinance says you're required to have a 100-foot natural roadside buffer, but it says in there that it can be reduced throughout the planning process. The planning process sometimes is design review board. In this case, because it's an impact assessment, it is the Planning Commission and Council that makes that decision. So their original proposal shows that they would like to do a 50-foot natural roadside buffer. This is what it looks like. So the front line is 50. Obviously, they showed their buildings to that point. If you did 100-foot, obviously, it would encroach into that conceptual plan that they've shown. We did want to show some of the adjacent buffers. So you can see the 50-foot, 100-foot in front of Life Park, and then 50 north of that. I do know that the Mellow Mushroom area, they were able to do the 50-foot in lieu of donating land for All American Boulevard. St. Francis and Carolina Park has 100-foot. The remainder of Carolina Park has 50 feet. And then Oakland has 100 feet. So that kind of gives you an idea of the area along there where the buffer has been reduced. Planning Commission did recommend that they install a 100-foot buffer. And then last is the issue of the pet daycare. Planning Commission heard quite a few concerns about the location of the pet daycare. And just to kind of reiterate, this is all a permitted use. So the AB district allows a pet boarding facility as a conditional use. The conditions are cited in our zoning code. Overnight kennels must be located indoors, which they are. And then where located adjacent to residential properties, areas shall be fenced or walled with an acoustic fence. And so typically what would happen is if this pet boarding facility had come in on its own, we would have looked at the conditions and we would have approved it. If they met the conditions, that's a staff level approval. And then they're able to go on through the development review process. Because this is part of an impact assessment and because it's a conditional use and there were concerns, the commission did want to see if the developer could move it. And because it's a permitted use, you can't make them move it to a different site. The entire site is AB, it's all permitted. But what they can do is look at extra landscaping and flipping, like siting of that area and those sorts of things. And so the Planning Commission did recommend that they make a few minor changes. And I know that y'all received correspondence, I think on Thursday or Friday, from the developer. And they have requested that you consider their changes that they've made. And so what they did was, previously adjacent to Life Park Church was those outdoor kennels. So they've flipped that to the other side, more internal, so it's the green area there. So they did make that change that they wanted to propose to the committee. They've also included correspondence where they talked about their enhanced architectural improvements. And so this was kind of what the commission wanted them to look at. What can you do to enhance the buffering and the site? They would have the required 10-foot buffer, and then they have the stormwater pond in between the building and then the church property. And so that is all I have. Again, the Planning Commission recommended the siting of the pet facility a little bit better. They also recommended that the 100-foot buffer be installed for the natural roadside. And I'm happy to answer questions you may have.
Okay, any questions, Ms. Reed?
I just have a couple of comments. So pet boarding is an allowable use. Michelle, again, I think the comprehensive view that you are giving us and the fact that you're reassuring us that the town is doing such a great job of looking at all components of how it's going to impact traffic, water, living around that area. I'm so impressed. Thank you so much. Speaking of the racquetball courts, we have been talking about exactly this concept for the longest time and hoping it would come to us. The privatization of athletic facilities takes some of the burden off of our taxpayers to provide all the services. So I think that is a much needed use for that space. And my last comment would be on the, you know, that area, we have two dogs and we've been talking about how much we needed that. I thought about opening up one because we have one on at the very end of Long Point by the ports, and then the other one is on Clements Ferry. So I think it would do quite well. And I love the fact that they have moved it and done their best to not bother the church on Sunday. I think that's beautiful of them as well. So yeah, those were my main points. I think it looks very good to me.
I have a couple of transportation questions. First of all, is the access shown on US 17 at the Joe Bryant current intersection?
That is currently a driveway access that's been permitted by DOT, existing condition.
That didn't answer my question.
I'm so sorry. Sorry.
Where is Joe Bryant on this drawing that's in front of us?
It is currently where the proposed driveway access is.
Okay, so they're going to use Joe Bryant Road.
Yes, sir.
As their main access.
Yes, sir.
Not adding anything extra. That's good. My next question is, in terms of the extension of All American Boulevard, will this project, I guess, not only consolidate but continue the All American Boulevard project all the way from its existing terminus near the church to the dead end, what appears to be a service road off of Lexington?
That is certainly something that we will be getting into further discussion with the developer on. Similar to other projects in this area, we have worked in the past to not necessarily require development to do that. It certainly behooves them to have that access earlier on. And at this point, you know, they do have a sizable transportation impact fee. I think our latest quote or estimate for this segment of All American Boulevard, which is programmed for 2024, was $1.5 million to construct. Their impact fee is $1.1 million. So there is some ability here, I think, to enter into those discussions with the developer to build the roadway in lieu of transportation impact fees, but we're not at that point yet.
Well, would there be in their property that they will develop that connection to that dead-end road that is now in existence, I think behind the appliance store?
Correct. I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that we have already purchased the necessary right-of-way for this segment of roadway.
Yes, sir. So All American Boulevard is a CIP project.
Yeah.
It's fully funded July 1 of next year. So what we're really talking about is a timing issue. And I don't, discussions with the administrator, I think that we're going to be in a position to have that ready to bid early next summer. I don't know the schedule for this, but I can tell you it typically takes more than a year for them to get out of the ground. So the ability to access All American for this site is, we want that, of course. We want to disperse that traffic. I think a consideration might be, given the value of their impact fee, could be that you could make a requirement for them to connect to the existing church section. That's only several hundred feet. How much?
250
feet. So for that impact fee value, we know it wouldn't cost $1.1 million for that, but it would give them access, and it would give them access to a signalized location intersection through Park West Boulevard. And that's the most important one here because it's the left out that we are trying to address with that access. So I think it's certainly a consideration that council could to make a condition that they make that connection, that portion. The rest of it would generally be funded, unless they wanted to make the connection, would be funded through our CIP project.
Okay. And you think that'll be ready to bid next year?
We have it permitted. Right-of-way is in place. The last piece is under condemnation, which is the Laurel Hill piece. So we'll be ready to go. Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, that's perfect. And my, let's see. I'm in favor of the 100-foot buffer as well. Any other questions from members of the committee before we have a motion?
I just have a question. So when we make a motion on this, do we make it with those recommendations?
I would encourage you to do that, but that's up to you.
Because I just don't want to have to. So... all right, so we're just going to, I'm going to give it a shot.
Have at it.
All right. So I move to approve the request to approve an impact assessment and conceptual plan for the properties located 3236 North Highway 17 with stated suggestions. What was the word?
Planning Commission.
With Planning Commission recommendations. Does that sound good?
Including
Planning Commission recommendations.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the impact assessment and conceptual plan with the recommendations from the Planning Commission included. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, I would like to recommend an amendment that the access onto All American Boulevard be constructed at least to the church where it now stops at the Life Church, and also to continue, have the developer continue to look at further locations for the trying to think of the right word. The animal
boarding facility.
The what?
The boarding.
Yeah, the animal boarding area.
Kennel.
To see if there's any further away that they can come up with, away from the church. Because there's a whole range of properties there that are tennis related. And maybe in somewhere in there. But that's my recommended amendment. I need a second for further discussion.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to require that the developer access from All American at least get to the where the church dead ends, church dead ends, and second to further discuss any additional extension away from the church of the animal boarding facility.
But so we're not that we're just asking them to continue to look at
correct
moving it
correct further away
further away.
Motion made and seconded to amend the original motion. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, voting on the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the amendment passes. We'll now go to the amended motion for approval. All those in favor of the amended motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, amended motion passes. Next item on the agenda is continued discussion on possible action regarding the proposed amendments to the town's short-term rental ordinance.
Thank you.
Ms. Reed.
Yes, sir. So this went for a public hearing for some changes in June. Sorry, May. It went for a public hearing. It came to the committee. And it was sent back to the commission for further discussion and input from the public. So here we are again. I want to go through real quick just a couple of the changes that staff did propose and talk about what came out of the discussion at the June Planning Commission meeting where it was discussed further. So just a couple of changes that staff made. And just a little bit of background here. Whenever we do text amendments, if you're changing one thing, a lot of times it's a good thing to tighten up language and tighten up things and that you see are loose ends or loopholes and things like that. So the original intent was to fix the cap to where it was more clear that current legally established STR operators got a first bite at the apple, and then if there was any permits left over, then any new applications could come in and apply for that. So that was kind of the intent. While we were in there, while we have it open, and while we have the public hearing, we added a few more things that the staff felt like needed to be cleaned up. So I'm going to go through all those real quick. So the first one obviously was a big one, to fix the cap. As you know, we have 437 STRs right now. And just to kind of put this in perspective, remember we have over 40,000 dwelling units in the town. So when this first started, the cap was, I think, 1.5%, 1%, and then it became the flat 400. The way the ordinance is currently written and the reason we are fixing it is because it does not specify that current STR operators get preferential treatment and get in first. So that's what we're doing with number one, change in the annual registration. So instead of the January 1 deadline, we are proposing that current STR operators apply first. They apply from November 15th to December 15th. So from December 15th to January 1, that gives staff time to go through all those applications, make sure that they are operating legally. They did everything they said they were doing. There's no violations. They paid all their taxes. Get all that established. Then if there's any left over, we would open that up and make that available January 1st to all those wanting to apply. And we would start with our wait list. We do have a wait list. The second proposed change was to clarify how you can rent an ADU property. And that was really just a clarification because it's confusing. Our ADU ordinance says in order to have an ADU, you have to live in one or the other. You have to live on site. So we wanted to make it more clear that if you're going to rent or use a property with an ADU as an STR, you have to live in one or the other. We wanted to beef up our off-street parking requirements. We get very few complaints, if any, but we do get people that say, hey, I've got three STR folks renting this property and they're parked on the street. So we wanted to make it clear that if you're offering up your property and you're running it as an STR, you need to be able to accommodate all of your guests on site. And you need to make it clear in your advertisement or however you do that, that I only have room for three vehicles, so don't bring any more than three vehicles. You can't park on the street. Next was proof of property taxes. We put in there that if you are 6%, not all of you are 6%, but if you are 6%, the town has the ability to ask for you to show proof of that. And then last, we wanted to add in a minimum rental. And we started with 120. And through a lot of discussion, we heard that that was too much. We talked about 72, because 72 is the cutoff by the state. If you rent up to 72, you're taxed at 4%. If you're over 72, you're taxed at 6%. We talked about that. And I think we landed on 24 days. And so, but what we wanted to do that was because even though we have 437 permits, we have 360 advertised. And we know there are folks out there that have never even used their STR. And we have people that wanna have a permit, they wanna operate it, and we want that money generated and coming to the town. And so what we said was we've got to put a minimum in there. And so it landed on 24. And I'll talk about that a little bit in a minute, what came out of the commission. So those were the main changes that are in this draft as it is now. So Planning Commission talked about it. We had some correspondence from the public. And what was brought back through that discussion for consideration here was to create two types of permits. Because we heard some folks come up and say, I only do this a couple weekends a year. We only do it if we want to make money to go on a vacation. Or we only do it for the bridge run or different festivals, things like that. We'll never meet the 24-day. And so it was brought up that we create a system of two permits. And we have software that's very sophisticated and allows us to see already who's renting how many days. So this wouldn't be overly burdensome on staff. And I know the commission had concerns about that. But so the cap would stay the same. You'd have 400 permits. You would apply for whatever you choose to operate. Are you going to do a 4%? You would have a minimum of 20 days up to 72 days, taxed at 4%. If you wanted to do anything more than 72 days, the Planning Commission recommended an increase in the application fee, and you would be taxed at 6%, and you would have to rent at least 72 days a year. As you apply, you would check which one you want to do. Do you want to do the 4% or the 6%? Once we hit the 400, you're done, and we still have the cap in place. But those folks that want to do only a few weekends a year have that ability. They have the same $250 application fee. And then those that want to do it full-time more and are operating at the 6% tax rate, the Planning Commission did recommend that higher application fee. And so that was kind of a system that was brought up at the last discussion. I wanted to put that before you and let you all discuss that. We are prepared to move forward with the amendments we have now that fixes the cap language. This, if we were to make these changes that came out of the commission, that would require us to go back. And we have time. Our next deadline isn't you know, for a few months. But it would require us to go back and have another public hearing and change some of the language. But that's what came out of the commission discussion. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions, Ms. Reed?
So really the only change that commission came up with was this concept.
Ms. Hyatt.
This is the only thing commission really knew came up with.
Yeah, they just, you know, we had several people get up and, you know, say, I only do this a couple times a year, but this is how we make ends meet when we need it. And so there was clearly there's two types. There's the people that only want to do it a couple times a year, and there's those that do it obviously more. And so that's why the commission said, why don't we have the two permit types? And so that's what came out of that last discussion. But they felt like if you're doing a 6%, you're obviously It is more of a business, like you heard from the public comment period. And so the application fee should be a little bit more, whereas if you're only doing the 4%, the 250, staying at the 250 application fee was reasonable.
Any other questions of Ms. Reed? Ms. Hyatt?
So the $1,500 number, I mean, that just came out of the air. Is that comparable with other fees that we put out for
There's
other types
fees.
Of permits?
Yeah, they asked me what the average rental night was, and it's our software shows the average rental is $230 a night. So they felt like, okay, well, if you're doing that and you're renting at least 72, I think one of the commission members did the math and felt like $1,500 was fair.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's actually been suggested by a few STR operators as well. Those of us that take it seriously and run it as a business, increase the application fee so that you know we're using it and we're not just sitting on it. That was kind of the idea with that.
Right. I mean, they're already paying more by paying 6%, but mm-hmm. Okay. $1,500 sounds like a lot, but
Ms. Coral?
So any changes that we would do would, of course, not begin until, I mean, people would have plenty of time to get ready for this, right? Because that's what one of the concerns a resident emailed,
mm-hmm.
That they just wouldn't have time to get ready. But now, right, they would have time to get ready.
If we move forward with what we have proposed now, current STR operators would start their application process November 15th.
Okay. So. And, you know, I think throughout this whole time, I think we've all been concerned about thinking we needed a tier system. We're trying to protect the small STR owner and keep the big STRs, you know, or watch what they're doing. So I like the fact that we're starting to look at this in a tier concept. I do think 1500 is kind of steep. I was wondering where that number came from. You know, I don't know, 1,200, 1,000, I think would do its job. And I love that 24 minimum. I thought the last time we talked, I thought we were at like 40. I can't remember where we were, but I like 24 even better. I think that really goes above and beyond protecting. I think with where our economy is and with inflation, people might have to use this as a resource more than they're currently doing it. So, yeah, those were my comments. Thank you.
Would anyone like to make a motion?
Motion to... What are we doing, recommending this to council, or...?
Well, you have two choices. You can recommend it to council without the suggested revisions from the Planning Commission, or send it back to the Planning Commission to hold a public hearing on these suggestions from them.
I thought they already had public
hearings. They have, but this is an update.
Yeah, we did, but it did not include this two-tiered system, and we would need to have another public hearing, so
okay.
We would need to advertise that.
All right.
But as Mr. Chapman said, we're prepared to move forward with the cap fix and those amendments right now. So this could be something that we explore later. We could do it now, however y'all wish to proceed.
I'm okay with another public hearing. But do we have to agree on, is this, so we have to agree on the 250 and 1500?
No, ma'am.
We can.
What I think we have to do is make a motion on sending this back to the Planning Commission mm-hmm. as it's prepared in front of us for holding a public hearing, or ignore that and send it to council without these suggested changes.
All right, so.
I mean, I'd like to move, but by lowering the fee to like 1,200. Can we do that in this motion? You're saying we can't.
I'm suggesting that because these are recommendations different from what we have, that there's a need for another public hearing through the Planning Commission, if that's what you want to do. Is that?
And Ms. Hyatt, we can talk about that at the, when we hold the public hearing, I'll talk about committee, what committee.
So we don't have to move to change it now. We can do that later when it comes back to us.
Right.
Correct.
All right.
And maybe during the public hearing, it gets changed anyway.
Okay. All right. I'll move that we send these recommendations back to Planning Commission for a public hearing.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded to take the Planning Commission's suggestions back to the Commission for a public hearing. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, call for the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay. On to the next item, which is discuss historic preservation in settlement communities. Ms. Reed.
Better.
Ms. Boyd.
I haven't seen, been up here with this new stuff. Fancy. Okay. Thank you. So last month when we were here, we talked about some of the recommendations that had come out of the Settlement Community Task Force. And we were specifically asked to kind of come back and talk about this particular recommendation a little bit more with respect to the potential opportunity for some zoning changes related to the the settlement communities that would offer some protection for their historic preservation value. So there were two among all the recommendations from the task force. There were two things that specifically kind of were related to this, in that they focus on the zoning in those areas that is intended to protect the character and the uses of those areas. So the first was a recommendation to adopt a specific historic preservation ordinance related to that which Charleston County has, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And another was to look at our current Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District, see how we could make it better work and better protect the communities. And there were certain things, as you see here, that were specified by the task force, including looking at, defining whether we should extend the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District to cover other communities that aren't currently covered by it. Right now, it's only a section of 6 mile and 7 mile communities that is part of the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay. Back to the first of those recommendations, Charleston County recently established a Historic Preservation Commission to work within county properties to protect and nominate new historic districts and review applications for those districts. So their new Historic Preservation Ordinance applies to any National Register properties, but as well as these locally designated by the county historic districts. So those county districts, the process is that it's kind of an opportunity for the communities themselves to opt in. The county has, you know, established this umbrella, this is how we're going to do things, and if you want to be part of that, then we go through a process of approving you as a historic district within the county. So Phillips Community and 10 Mile Communities have been through that process with the county to establish themselves as historic districts. So within those two communities now in the East Cooper area, any sort of project within the boundaries of those communities, and there is a map that goes along with the adoption of, with the designation of this community, this historic area that, you know, that draws a boundary. And so anything basically that happens within that boundary has to go to their Historic Preservation Commission for approval, for a certificate of appropriateness. It can be anything from subdivisions to changes to a house to building a garage to pretty much anything. Being that it's in the historic district, has to go to that commission, and there is then public notice of whatever the project is, and an opportunity for the community to give input. One thing that we need to think about in, as we, you know, move along with this, obviously this is a county program at this point, and it applies to properties and to projects that are in the unincorporated area. We, you know, we're obviously talking today about, do we want to do a similar program? And so a question would be, you know, if the area is mostly county, a little bit town, and we've got the county's overlay deals with projects and properties that are in the county, and then the town's converse, you know, would apply to things that are in the town, is there going to be any continuity between the two? So if we have half a dozen properties in, say, 10 mile that are now in the town, so we're just having review over these half a dozen properties, trying to figure out how we could make that work would be something that we would want to talk about moving forward, because you don't want something going on in the county and then the town doesn't know, and the town, you know, kind of in the same situation we've been in. So that's just something to think about. One thing that we do have presently going on, working with county staff who are represented here today, is we've been working together on the Sweetgrass Basket angle of things, looking at how we could modify the Sweetgrass Basket overlay to better meet the needs of the communities. We've been talking with 10 Mile specifically because they were going through the process with the county and they were already engaged and talking about these issues anyway. So it's kind of like, all right, well, let's start there and kind of try to come up with a template for how we could better recreate the Sweetgrass Basket overlay to protect not only the 6 mile and 7 mile communities where it has presently been in place, but any of the communities that, again, you know, our concept is if they want to opt in, if they want to claim this for themselves, then we could establish an overlay like this on in that area. One of the things we could potentially do, and I'm just trying to think about ways to maybe blend these two, the historic preservation and the overlay district itself, there might be things that we could write into the Sweetgrass, the new overlay district, the new settlement community overlay district, that would address some of the historic preservation concerns, perhaps without establishing a new commission that would, you know, again, these are details that we'll have to work out once we have a better direction where we want to go. But that is something that we are presently working on, because, you know, obviously we're doing our code rewrite. The county is also doing a code rewrite. So the timing is good on that to try to incorporate these changes as we move forward. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Hearing none, the only question I have is, I'm sorry, Ms. Hyatt. Go ahead, Ms. Hyatt.
I, for a long time, I thought, I wonder if there's a way, if we have something like this, delegating historic, if that would encourage communities to come into the town because mm-hmm. they would feel protected. So to me, this is a good starting point. I guess it's with working with the overlays, that's helping the communities that are already in the town to protect them. But to me, if we could come up with a good historic designation, it may be a way that we could get more to come into the town and they would feel that their interests are protected. So this is something that I've been interested in a long time.
Yeah. Ms. Corley? I agree with you, Ms. Hyatt, that we need to try to do our best, first of all, looking at the recommendations that have come out of that commission for us. One of the, and the extension of the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District seems to be a good first start. And in particular in the 10-mile community where we are now getting some of that neighborhood annexing into town. So is there anything that we as council need to do to help you in your deliberations? Do you need anything from us that you're not already doing? Is there any kind of a motion you need from us?
I don't believe so. I'm glad to hear, you know, that you're on board with the concept of moving forward with these, developing these protections. And obviously, as we get further into the nitty-gritty of it, we'll be bringing it back through the review process for your input and consideration when we've got something more for you to look at.
Okay. Well, but as long as you don't,
the direction and the concept is wonderful at this point.
Direction or suggestion, what you're doing is great, and it you know, the whole thing is to try to make Mount Pleasant look as good as what the county's doing, so that we might get some more people to come in. So I guess the word is carry on.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is an update on zoning code rewrite and livability division efforts. Ms. Reed.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. I know that Ms. Whitley, who couldn't join us today, had asked that this be on for the agenda today. But we did want to, and this falls right into the next topic, but it's not as easy as you think when you start looking at all the different keys. You know, you've got the county properties and the town properties. So trying to make sure that we're headed in the right direction while, you know, working with legal in the county. So, but as Liz said, we'll continue to update you on how this goes. But we feel like this is the best way moving forward to start to protect these areas. And so we appreciate you weighing in on that. I just wanted to give an update. I know you keep hearing about it, but it's ongoing. We are continuing to work on the code rewrite. And I just want to kind of give you some examples of some things that it entails. You know, think about the fact that while we've made amendments over the years, this code has not been fully updated since 1979. So there's a lot of language, a lot of concepts, a lot of things. Every definition we're looking at, does it still make sense in today's time? And what are we missing? So things is, you know, this comes up, and it's one of those things you don't think about, but donation bins, we get calls about these. Where can we put them? We want to put one in the parking lot of a Walmart, and it's like, we don't even have this in our definition. So just making sure that we're meeting the needs of our community today versus years ago. We're also obviously looking, even in the definitions for our economic development strep plan, so adding in those clusters and those, making sure we have them defined, because we're going to address them later in our principal use table and through our zoning and all of those things. So adding those in and making it clear what we mean when we talk about information technology and marketing design and publishing. These are just other areas that we're working on. You can see it's a lot. We're not only are we incorporating the ED strat plan, but the comp plan. So when you talk about things like from the comp plan, the recommendation was consider allowing a variety of housing types. So when we talk about affordable housing, everybody thinks you have to have an apartment building with 150 units. Well, you don't. You could have a duplex sandwiched into a residential neighborhood. So as we're going through our definitions and those sorts of things in our use districts, we're looking at where would we allow a duplex? Should it be allowed as a special exception in a residential zone? What about a triplex? We didn't even contemplate a triplex years ago. So adding those definitions in so that we can start to look at those sorts of uses as we move throughout the zoning code. Our principal use table, making it match all those definitions. This is just a snapshot of what we're looking at. Along with our principal use table, we're going to have an accessory use table and then a temporary use table. So we're looking forward to have that. Obviously, it lays out what is an accessory use or structure, what are the conditions, do you have to have a zoning permit for it, etc. So that's kind of where we are. We're continuing to work back and forth with our consultants on the code update. We are into the third and fourth or C and D subchapters, and I anticipate we'll probably have a good chunk to send for to the commission, hopefully August or September. So we'll start with those. Livability, as you can see, we continue to work on the settlement community stuff. Liz has done a great job with that and being able to work with the county. We did just apply for a grant to complete some historic surveys of those properties, which would be very exciting if we got. We continue to do collaborate with other departments, doing weekly sign sweeps, obviously with the elections. This is a busy year. Thank you, Mr. Chapman. You always keep us in track, too. And you can just see some of the stuff that Chris has been dealing with. And then our livability division, this is a great tool that Liz set up, but we literally use this daily. And it allows all the different departments to go in and we track. This just gives you an idea of what livability deals with. We're dealing with noise, dumping, parking, trees, broke down campers, drainage inlets, erosion, those sorts of things. But this allows us to clean up of a fire, truck fire. Street lights are too bright. So these are the things that we get daily. But this data site allows us to work through those things and to resolve all these issues in a more comprehensive way with our other departments. And then last but not least, Livability is working on another portion of the comp plan implementation, which are these... I think they were called district area plans in the comp plan. We're kind of calling them a deeper dive into our neighborhoods. And the comp plan establishes eight or nine districts. So you're going to hear more about this once we have our locations nailed down in our times. But we're going to start meetings in the fall throughout these different districts. And we're going to have in-person open house meetings. We're going to talk about all the different things you could think of, housing, Mount Pleasant Way, economic development, all those things to help us just to move forward with livability issues. And then, you know, eventually we're going to have to do our five-year update to our comp plan. And so this will help inform that process later on. So that's where we are with that. Hopefully in August, I'll have more details on those meetings coming up in the fall with more information on that. And I'm happy to answer any questions that y'all may have.
Any questions from the committee? My only question is, where are we with Livability Court?
So Livability Court, it's what we've done is designate one day a month for Livability Court. We have six-month rotations for our judges. And so there isn't necessarily enough cases right now to have its own court. So what we've did was throughout the system we have set up a day once a month, and it's been set up to where if we start to pick up on some of these, because most of it really is short-term rental stuff, people that operating without a permit. And so if the demand is there, then we'll expand it to 2 days a month. And as it expands, if the need is for a separate livability court, then that's what we'll do. But right now we have a system set up 1 day a month. It's all livability issues. It's code enforcement, short-term rentals, anything like that. As I said, our judges are on a six-month rotation, so they get to know the issues and livability and all those things that we're dealing with. And so it's really worked out good so far. But if things pick up and it gets to that, then we will have a separate court. But for now, it's working with what we have.
Thank you. Hearing all the suggestions about the short-term rentals, I thought mm-hmm. that was an appropriate place. Yep. For those complaints to go.
Yes, sir. It's worked out really well. Jane has went to court, I think, 4 or 5 times. But as I said, they are pretty much all tickets for folks that operate without a permit. Our short-term rental operators rarely have any issues with them. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call for adjournment.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you.
Thank you.